Last class, what have we been talking about? Making personal evangelism personal again. As we've gone through this class, I hope some things that we have talked about have been helpful for you. I hope they have been encouraging. I hope they have been motivating. Nothing that we have done in this class was intended to be putting you on a guilt trip. If you went on a guilt trip during this class, you packed your own bags for that. That wasn't me, okay? But I think some of this should cause us to do some reflection. Hopefully, it causes all of us to do some reflection and say, okay, where am I in this? Would you say that the first century church, the church that we read about in the book of Acts, would you say they were good at personal evangelism? Yes or no? That's a yes or no question. Would you say the church in the book of Acts was good at personal evangelism?
Yes.
Okay, good answer. I mean, that's not an easy hard. Okay, here's the other part of that. What made them good? You said yes, so feed me now. I mean, you were confident in your yes. So what made them good?
One-on-one.
They were motivated. Say again.
One-on-one.
Man, they worked one-on-one. They were concerned about each individual soul. What made them good? Cheryl Ann is a teacher. She's raising her hand. Nobody else raised their hand except for the teacher. Go ahead, teacher.
Consistency.
That's hard sometimes, right? Jim. Okay, they had the Spirit of God in them. They were effective. They were motivated. They were determined. And when they started being persecuted because of what they were doing, can you imagine being persecuted for preaching about Jesus? We might start doing more than just imagining that, but seriously, what we have put up with, even recently, seriously, is nothing compared to them. All right, read Acts chapter 7, what happened to Stephen. You have not yet had people throw boulders at your head and kill you, okay? So, but it was Acts chapter 7 where they threw boulders and rocks at Stephen's head and killed him, and it's in Acts chapter 8 that says they were persecuted, not just Stephen, the rest of the church was persecuted. And what did they do? They went everywhere preaching the word. Well, what got them persecuted to begin with? Preaching the word. They left town, and what'd they do? Were they a different breed than we? I mean, what's the deal? Were they? Pardon?
They believed it was their job.
It wasn't just that they were eating their Wheaties. Okay, they believed this is what we've got to do. They had blood running through their veins. They breathed oxygen the same as we do. I mean, there's nothing different on a molecular, physical level. The only thing that's different is our heart, is our spirit, is our motivation. Now, real quick, and we won't spend a lot of time here, but just to review, just some of the highlights of some of the things that we have talked about over these last few weeks. Great Commission of Jesus is the greatest work on earth. And this isn't in your handouts. This is in the first 20-something pages, all right? You've already got all of this, so this is just kind of highlights, at least for me, some of the highlights. Great Commission of Jesus, greatest work on earth. You won't find anything greater than doing this. Whose responsibility is it? It's everybody. Every Christian has a personal responsibility to lost souls. Not just a few of us, every single one of us. You are going to meet somebody tomorrow who needs the gospel. I don't know who it is. You might not know who it is today. You're going to meet somebody tomorrow who needs the gospel. You think that's true? I mean, unless you're just going home tonight and you're staying home and you're not getting out, somebody's going to call you tomorrow. A telemarketer is going to call you tomorrow. Guess what? They need the gospel. All right? You send them $100 for whatever they want, and, you know, they send them the gospel too. But you're going to talk to somebody tomorrow. You're going to make a doctor's appointment tomorrow. You're going to call the pharmacist tomorrow and ask them why they gave you the wrong prescription. Something's going to happen tomorrow where you're going to interact with somebody who's lost. We've got a responsibility to them. So what is it that ought to motivate us? And this that's the word that we've used over and over these last few weeks. Love ought to motivate us. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 14, Paul says, the love of Christ compels us. Does that mean that the love that Jesus has for me compels me? Or does it mean that the love that I have for Jesus compels me? Just say yes. It's both. Should the love that Jesus has for me motivate me and move me to care about lost souls? Yep. Should the love that I have for Him? We sang Walking in Sunlight. I thought about just singing a verse of, Oh, How I Love Jesus. That was one of Joe Holland's favorite songs. How many of you went to camp with Joe Holland singing, Oh, How I Love Jesus at camp? All right, that happened. That was fun. Those were interesting memories. But how much do we love? How much do we love the Lord? That ought to be our motivation in all of this. We talked about overcoming us, overcoming whatever fears, obstacles, excuses that we might make. Whatever those are, identify them. Say, that's why I'm afraid to do this. That's why I won't do this. And wipe it out. Do whatever you got to do to overcome that hurdle, because that, whatever that is, it cannot stop us from doing what the Lord has called us to do. And when we do what the Lord has called us to do, where is He going to be? Isn't it amazing? Matthew 28, what does Jesus say? Go therefore, make disciples of who? All nations, right? Go therefore, make disciples of all nations. How do you make a disciple? Baptizing them. That's how you make a disciple. Baptizing them into the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. How do you make a disciple? Teaching them. Can they become a disciple without teaching them? No, it's not possible. Teaching them to observe whatsoever things I've commanded you. And then here's the part. Lo, I am where? How often?
All the time.
Until when?
To end.
Can you figure out a time that He's not going to be with us? Doesn't exist. What context is that statement in? That context, the context of that statement is not when you're having a hard day, when you feel lonely, when you've got news from your doctor that you weren't expecting, when you know somebody said something to you that hurt you. Now, is God with you in all of those circumstances? Yes, 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 yes. But what's the context of Him saying this? Great Commission. The context of this is, you go and do My work in spreading the gospel, and I'm going to be right there with you. I planted, Apollos watered. What does the next part of that statement say? God gave the increase. Does that mean that God wasn't involved in the planting and the what? God was there all along. The Lord is with us every step of that way. If you're afraid, talk to the Lord. If you're afraid of what somebody might say or what somebody might do, talk to the Lord. He's right there. You talk to Him like He's in heaven, but talk to Him like He's right there beside you, because that's where He is. He's with you every step of the way. And so what I need to do is to awaken to the lost souls that are all around me. Everybody that I meet, almost, with very, very, very few exceptions, everybody that I meet is lost. Okay? I need to be aware of that. You know, the people that upset you, they're lost. Whether that's at work, whether that's at the store, whether that's somebody in your family, whether that's somebody in your neighborhood who keeps parking on your grass, they have a lost soul. And so when you go and knock on their door and say, excuse me, your truck is on my lawn again. They've got a lost soul. And more than getting off of your grass, they need to know about Jesus. I need to awaken the lost souls around me. I need to create opportunities. I need to talk to people. I need to give them these cards that you can carry around in your pocket, in your wallet. I need to give them a track. I need to send them a link to some lesson. What all of those things we talked about, just creating opportunities in order that I might have an opportunity to say, hey, could we get together and study the Bible sometime? And the majority of people are going to say what to that question? Yes. No. When you ask somebody if they'll study the Bible with you, the majority of the people are going to say no.
I say yes.
How do we know that? Well, because when that man went and sowed the seed, did it always fall on good soil?
Wayside.
It didn't always fall on good soil. Now, If you prepare the soil and you create opportunities and you live a godly life in front of people, that is preparing them for you to ask the question, hey, will you study the Bible with me? And in that case, John, maybe most people will say yes instead of no. And so we talked over the last few weeks about tools and resources and just a variety of things that are out there, study guides that are out there for you to take and use, so that really, we don't have an excuse. If my excuse is, I don't think I know enough, which I think is the biggest excuse that sometimes, I don't know enough. You do. You're a Christian. You know exactly what you need to tell other people to do to become a Christian because you became one. But if you're fearful of, I don't know how to do it, there's guides, study guides out there that'll just walk you through the steps, and all you have to do is open a Bible, read the verse, and answer a question. We can do that. All right, so Last bit of it tonight is talking about challenging ourselves. What page is this? 23? Challenging ourselves. Is it effective to set goals? Is goal setting effective? Yeah. What happens if you don't set a goal? Just in general. I'm just talking about life in general. If you don't set a goal, you won't do anything. What else?
I don't have a vision.
You don't have a vision. If you don't set a goal in some, what's going to happen?
No direction.
Sherilyn, teacher, yes, raise your hand. Your path is, say it again. Your path is unclear and undefined. So if you do set goals, then your path is clear. You've got a clear direction. You've got a clear purpose. But that doesn't happen if you don't set goals. Because if you don't set goals, then you could end up anywhere, right? Do you, by the way, teachers and parents, do you see that with children? If children don't have goals, where do they go? What'd you say, Nicole?
Nowhere.
On the couch, okay? If children do not have goals, they end up on the couch. So do you set goals for them sometimes, for your children? Yeah. Setting clear goals, specific. Many of you have set goals over the years and you know what SMART goals are, right? S-M-A-R-T. What are SMART goals? What does S stand for in SMART for goals? Specific. What does that mean? You can't just set a generic goal. When it comes to evangelism, let me encourage you not to say, well, I need to just do more. Is that specific? No. I mean, it's going in the right direction, right? You're not saying, well, I need to do less. Less would be less. That's not specific either. So at least you're going in the right direction. But be specific. What's the M in SMART for SMART goals?
Measurable.
All right? So saying I'm going to do more while it's going in the right direction, it's not necessarily measurable. You know, because, well, I could do anything and still be doing more, but I need something that's going to be measurable, that I can say that I know that I have attained it, that I've reached it. What is the A? There's a couple different words that are sometimes used for the A, but what's one of the general A's in SMART goals? Achievable is the one I usually think of. Attainable. Attainable, achievable. What does that mean? It's got to be something that's within your reach. If you're going to set a goal in personal evangelism, is it attainable, is it achievable for you to say, I am going to teach the gospel to 900,000 people in the month of June? Probably not. Just probably not. So what's the R? And again, there's a couple different words that sometimes come up with the R in SMART goals. What did somebody say? Realistic. Realistic is sometimes one of those words that goes along with the attainable, reachable. Sometimes you'll have the word relevant for the R. What does relevant mean? You know, it's got to fit what I'm even talking about here. It's got to fit within the scope. And then the T in SMART. And these are, I don't even know why I'm talking about this, probably because Joe Holland drilled it into my head about setting SMART goals. But the T is time sensitive. And sometimes there's other T words that come along with those SMART goals. But time sensitive, it says, I need to set a date on this. When you were, when Let me be more specific with this question. Ladies, I was going to put it in general terms, but that wouldn't work. Ladies, when you were looking to get married, did you set a date? Notice I didn't ask the guys. Ladies, when you were looking to get married, did you set a date? I didn't ask the guys because the guys would be like, "Yep, we'll do it. When do you want to do it? Whenever. Just tell me when and I'll show." You know, because guys are like, "What?" But the ladies are like, "We're putting it on the calendar right here, right?" So there's a date that's set. Time-sensitive goals means I want to meet this goal, and here's the date. Since I keep mentioning Joe Holland, I'll mention him again. Joe Holland used to say that the calendar drives things. Do you notice that to be true? Calendar. When you put something on a calendar, does that make a difference? Now, for some of us, with our electronic calendars, we're like just, I didn't meet it. Copy. Paste over here 4 weeks later, and I'll just see if I can meet it over there. But generally speaking, if you plug something in on a date, you need to say, I'm going to meet it by that date. And so, set goals. Set goals that are specific, that are measurable, that are achievable, realistic for you, because those goals will help you to have a clear direction. Number two, I spent too much time kind of introducing some of that, but number two, having goals will help to trigger behaviors that maybe you wouldn't normally have. Does that make you think of raising kids? When you set goals for your kids, does that sometimes cause them to do things that they wouldn't normally do? Yeah. When you set goals for your kids and say, we're going to do that, would your kids normally clean up their room on their own if you didn't set that goal for them? And you're like, they don't do that even when I do. But if you didn't set the goal, would they, and fill in the blank? So they need goals that will help them to manipulate behavior. So what about us? And again, we're in the arena of personal evangelism. If I set goals, it helps to trigger behaviors that I might not normally have. Now, these next couple kind of fall in line with that same concept. But number three, when I set goals, it helps to keep me focused. When you play football, now, I've known of players who intercepted, intercepted a pass and then ran the wrong way after they intercepted. I've seen players that picked up a fumble and then they started running the wrong way. You've seen that happen? And the whole team is like shouting, wrong, But generally speaking, when you're playing football, you're playing basketball, you know where the goal is. That's where we're headed. That's where the team's going. So when we set goals in personal evangelism, it says, that's where I'm going. Yes. It helps us to stay focused on that's what I want to accomplish. When I set goals, it helps to motivate me. I'll just say this in a general way. You don't need to respond to this. But if you set a goal that you are going to lose certain number of pounds by a certain date, does that help in this regard? Does that give you a clear direction? That's kind of where I'm headed. All right. Does it sometimes help to trigger behaviors? Well, I can't eat that. Well, normally I would, but I've set this goal that I'm not going. Does it help you to stay focused? Sometimes, except when somebody puts a homemade key lime pie. Never mind. But when to help you to stay focused when you do these things, does it help to motivate you? I've set this goal. I want to. Now, maybe losing weight was the bad example. Let's scrub that because I lost you when I mentioned that and you got mad at me for mentioning that. So forgive me. But think of some other goal that you would set. Does it motivate you to get there? That's what goals do. If I didn't have the goal, I wouldn't be interested in it. And the last thing it does is not only does it motivate me and keep me focused, but it sustains me. I'm on a path, and it helps me to sustain the direction and to sustain momentum in the process because, well, I'm not there yet. I'm not there. I'm almost there. What happens when you start getting close to a goal? Almost there. And now you're driven a little bit, I'm there. And as closer you get sometimes, the more you do to accomplish it. I'll do it just a little bit more and I'm there. Now, all of this is in the arena of talking about personal evangelism. We've talked about awakening to prospects around us. We've talked about creating opportunities, talking to people, giving them the cards and sending them the links and the various things we can do. And we've talked about trying to teach people the Bible. But all of that is in the arena of we just need to do better. We need to do more. All of that's true. But can I encourage you? I thought I already had six up there. Setting goals helps us to build our confidence and to promote growth. I build my confidence. The more I go through with these achieving these goals, I'm building my confidence, and it is helping me to grow in this process. And so those are your two blanks there on builds confidence and produces growth. So that little next section that you have on your sheet is just a possibility for you to look at individually and to say, okay, what do I need to do? Oops, come back to me. Can I encourage you to look through that and just set some personal goals for yourself? Just go and sometime you can set whatever marker you want. The one that's here is I'm going to do that this year. Well, if that's the case, you've got what, 7 more months in 2020, but you might set a different marker out there. Remember, goals need to be time sensitive. You set a date. I want to pass out this many things. I want to talk to this many. I want to invite this many people to worship. Whatever. And you, it doesn't have to be these goals. You can make different goals. But make some goals and put some numbers in there. Because numbers, remember, goals need to be specific and measurable. Numbers will help drive you. Make it achievable. Don't say, well, I'm going to invite 900,000 people to worship in the next month. Okay, great. I hope you will. You know, that's wonderful. You know, we'll have to knock out some walls and put some chairs out in the parking lot, but go for it. All right, but that's not realistic. Put some numbers there. And you don't have to share that with anybody else. Just keep it to yourself. It's between you and God that says, God, here's what I want to accomplish in reaching people with the gospel. You may not like this idea. You may look at this and say, that's kind of corny. Okay. Come up with something that's going to motivate you. Come up with something that's going to drive you to accomplish what we need to accomplish in the greatest work on earth. To see people, to see that they have an eternal soul, they are an eternal soul, and that something that we do, something we can't, that we say, can affect where they spend eternity. So let me share some, we've got about 12 minutes here. Let me share some 10 guarantees. Do you like guarantees? Everybody likes guarantees, right? I mean, that sells cars, right? Right, Sylvester? I mean, if you can give somebody a guarantee, it sells cars. You know, if you could say to somebody, I guarantee you this car is going to last for 10 years and it'll never break down. Would you buy that car? Man, I'd buy that car. I don't even know what kind of car it is. But if you could say it's never going to break down in 10 years, people like guarantees, all right? So here's some guarantees for you when it comes to personal evangelism. You're not going to like the first one, but it's a guarantee. Personal evangelism is difficult work. I know I told you wouldn't like it. It's difficult work. Now, aren't most things that are worthwhile difficult work? Would you say, at least early on in marriage, would you say that marriage was difficult work? Maybe you shouldn't answer that out loud. Just think in your head. Are there some things that are difficult work, but they are worthwhile? Yeah. Is raising children difficult work? Wouldn't you like to take them back to the store and exchange them in? Get a cute teddy bear instead? This is difficult work. Worth it in the long run? It's going to take some effort on our part, and there may be some things that are difficult about it, but we might say, well, doing nothing is a whole lot easier. Guess what, Christians? Doing nothing should not be an option for us. Doing nothing should not be an option for us. We need to get engaged. Now, it's not just difficult work. Tag this number two on right beside it. It is highly rewarding. Is there effort, difficulties, heartaches involved? Yeah. Is it rewarding? When is it rewarding? Tell me what. Personal evangelism, when is that rewarding?
When you see the results.
When you see the results. When is it rewarding? When somebody's soul is saved. You see somebody baptized into Christ, that's rewarding. When is it rewarding? As soon as you open your mouth and you start the study, you just feel it. Was that the teacher raising her hand? Okay, go ahead. Sorry, I peripheral vision, I couldn't tell. And I know it wasn't Nicole because she doesn't raise her hand. Go ahead, Sherilyn. Okay. Your reward is right at that moment. The Lord is helping you through it. If I don't think I have a verse written down here next to this. If I were to write a verse here, what Sherilyn says makes me think of 1 Corinthians chapter 3. If you want to write this next rewarding, 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verses 5 through 14, is that whole section that talks about I planted, Apollos watered, God gave the increase. That's rewarding. That's God taking care of the reward. But you get down into the later verses there into about verse 14 where he uses the word reward to talk about our efforts in personal evangelism. And there he's even talking about the reward in heaven. How would you like to be in heaven and see somebody that you helped obey the gospel in heaven? That's what 1 Corinthians 3 is talking about. Would that be rewarding? Not selfish pride. But thank God they obeyed the gospel, and they get to enjoy heaven with me. Now, difficult? Yes. Rewarding? So the reward is twofold. It's now and it's then. It's now and it's in heaven. It's as soon as I start, as soon as I open my mouth, when I see results. Number three, guarantee. Hardest part? Getting started. So it's like some of our cars. Once you get it started, it runs okay. But boy, you just sit there and you pray that it's going to turn over. Sometimes the hardest part is just getting started. Overcoming those barriers. Opening our mouth. Asking the question. If we can just come over. But once we get started, oh, this is okay. This gets easier. Now, this next one is like an unto it. Success breeds success. What does that mean? You sit down and study the Bible, and this is going to go along. Let me just put it up here because these are all different sayings, but they all kind of go together. You sit down and study the Bible with somebody, and you just caught the bug. You just caught the bug. When you sit down and study the Bible with somebody, you won't be satisfied with saying, oh, okay, this study's over. Okay, I'm going to go back and watch the reruns of MacGyver again. Then we'll have another Bible study 10 years from now. You sit down and study the Bible with somebody, and you'll want to do it again. There's something about whether that person obeys the gospel. Don't misunderstand the point that we're making here. Whether somebody obeys the gospel or not, okay? Remember what we said last week? Don't rush somebody to baptism. We want to teach them the gospel. We want them to be baptized. But my job, remember what Paul said? Lord did not send me to baptize. Does that mean that baptism is not essential for salvation? No, that's not what it means. If that's what it meant, then why did he baptize people 3 verses earlier in 1 Corinthians chapter 1? But he says, my purpose is to preach the gospel. Well, whose responsibility is it for somebody to be baptized? Their responsibility. My responsibility is to teach the gospel. And when I do that, I want to do it again. It's the rewarding part. It's what some of you said. As soon as I open my mouth, it's the rewarding part of, wow, I haven't done this before. It's been so long since I need to do this again. Who else can I ask to sit down and study with me? You will go hunting for somebody else, and You better watch out, because if somebody you study the Bible with does get baptized, hello, you're going to run out of that occasion of them being baptized, and you're going to go knocking on people's doors saying, hey, can I study the Bible with you? Why? Because there's something about the Lord's work. There's nothing like it. Remember what Paul said in Philippians chapter 1? Remember when he said, for me to live is Christ, to die is gain? Why was he talking about those two options? Because Paul was in prison in Philippians chapter 1. We got to do this quick. So Paul's in prison. He realizes the possibility his life is coming to an end. But if it comes to an end, where's he going? Going to be with the Lord, verse 23. But he says, if I stay here, verse 22 and 23, Philippians 1, he says, if I stay here, it will mean more fruit from my labors. Paul, what are you going to do if you stay alive? Even if you're in prison. Acts chapter 28, verse 30, 31, what's he doing in prison? Teaching people the gospel. Paul, what are you going to do if you stay here and live? I'm going to keep teaching the gospel. That's where the fruits come from. That needs to be me. That needs to be my life, that my goal is just to find people to teach the gospel. Time is running away from us. Number six, are we on number six guarantee? You're going to learn a lot yourself. I know we understand that teachers always learn the most. You are going to learn a lot yourself, and this never stops. Studying with somebody last week, going through Acts chapter 2 with them, I don't know how many times I've read, studied, and taught people Acts chapter 2. And I'm teaching somebody some stuff from Acts chapter 2 last week, and boom. Saw something, learned something I had never thought and seen. What? You dummy, you've read that chapter how many times? You will learn the most. Teach people the Bible, and you will fall in love with the Bible and say, I want to do this some more. You're going to learn. And so, wait, let me back up. If our concern is, I don't know enough to teach, start teaching. You're going to learn. You might learn the hard way, but you're going to learn. Number seven, you open your eyes to souls that are around you, and you're never going to be the same. If instead of seeing people's skin color, if instead of seeing people's age, if instead of seeing their educational level, if instead of seeing people's economic status and how much money they have or don't have, or, you know, do they talk English or do they talk this language or do they have an act, instead of all of those things that don't matter, what was that word on Sunday, inconsequential? If you say they've got a soul that's going to go to heaven or hell and I can say something that might make a difference, you'll never be the same. Three verses on these 8, 9, and 10. When we get involved in teaching and saving lost souls, Proverbs chapter 11 says that you will be counted as wise. He who wins souls, God says, is wise. Here's a book of Proverbs that contrasts being wise and being foolish. Which one you want to be in the eyes of God? If I win souls, Proverbs 11 says, he who wins souls is wise. If I get involved in teaching the gospel to people, helping them to obey the gospel, God says that on the day of judgment, I will be considered a good and faithful servant. Number 10, final verse from Joshua chapter 1. I wish we had time to go over and look at it. I know you're familiar with it, but go over and look at it. When I do the Lord's work, where's the Lord? He's right there with me to help me do it. I am not on my own. I'm never on my own. The Lord. How often do you read this expression in Psalms and in Isaiah? The Lord is my helper. Do you believe that? Or that was just the Old Testament God, right? Only the Old Testament God was their helper. He's not my helper today. He's just my person that I pray to and ask him to forgive me. Is he still our helper? Every bit as much as he was their helper. So very quickly, last page. 20th century, great missionary by the name of Otis Gatewood wrote a book called You Can Do Personal Work. And came out with one edition, came out with a revised edition. It was almost twice as long as the first edition. But he has this in there, and I've got a couple blanks for you. If you want to save a soul badly enough, you will make a way. There might be some things that you have to do, some rules you have to follow, but the greatest is the desire. There's your blank. If you want to save a soul badly enough, if you've got that desire, that's all that matters. You may not know best how to talk to people about their souls, but if you want so badly that you cannot keep from doing it, your biggest battle is won. Know definitely why you should be a personal worker, and the how's not going to be that difficult. You won't say, I don't know enough. You won't say, well, you know, how am I going? No. If you want to do it so bad that you say, I've got to do this, you'll figure out. Isn't that the case in everything in life? Well, not just in this. That's the case in everything in life. When we say, no, that's what I want to do, you'll find a way. Some of you are married today because you said, nope, I'm not going to take no for an answer. I'm going back for another try. And you're married to that same person. Why? Because you tried again. You had a desire. You weren't going to be stopped. You didn't know how to be married, but you said, I'm going to be married to this. Whatever illustration you want to put in there, it's the same thing. It's the same thing with this. So, last questions. Here are these blanks. I wish we had time to look at all of these. Are you like Jeremiah? What did Jeremiah say? No, I'm not going to say anything, Lord. I'm done talking for you. And what was the word of God in him? Like fire in his bones. I don't know what that feels like, but I would suspect fire in my bones would be pretty moving, wouldn't you? If you had fire in your bones, would you be able to sit still and be quiet? I don't think any of us would be quiet. We'd be crying our eyes out if we had fire in our bones. That was Jeremiah. You can't be quiet. Are you like Peter and John? We cannot but speak the things that you could tell us not to speak. No, it's okay, but we cannot but speak. Are you like Jeremiah, number one? Are you like Peter and John, number two? Are you like Paul, number three? Paul says, woe is me if I don't preach. Is that us? Woe is me if I don't preach? Are you like Christ? What did Christ say? For this purpose I have come. For what purpose have we come? This is our last class. This is it. For what purpose have we come? Have we come to get a job, have a nice paying job, live in a nice house, drive a nice car, leave our kids a nice inheritance? Is that why we've come? We've come for the same purpose. Christ came to preach the gospel, to seek and save the lost. We ran out of time here at the end, but I hope some of this has been helpful and motivating to us. If there's anything that I can do, that we can do to help you in teaching the gospel, if you set up a study and want somebody to be there, you let us know. But thank you all for your attention tonight.